Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of endless destinations. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Ealing. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Jason.
Do you realize that this is the last episode that will be released before we are in Japan?
Yes, I have realized that.
It's pretty exciting.
It is, man. It is. Less than a month.
Time to start counting the days.
I should, actually.
How many days is it exactly? It's not important. We don't need to take time to do that right now. But I did want to take this chance to mention our upcoming meetup coming up very soon. November 6th, 2024 at 7 p.m. We're going to be at Commune on the rooftop of the Shibuya Parco shopping mall in Tokyo. I would think that most people that are planning on being there have already written it down in their itinerary or something. But, you know, if there's anyone that hadn't heard about it yet and was just going to happen to be in Tokyo at the time, maybe it's worth mentioning.
Maybe it's November 5th and somebody's listening for the first time and they happen to be in Tokyo.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
If that happens, tell me.
Yeah, right.
And I'll buy you a drink. Well, you got anything you want to talk about, Paul, or should we get into it?
Actually, I suppose I haven't told you yet. I almost died the other night. I mean, that's a little dramatic.
That sounds like big news. What happened?
I was playing softball, actually, and I was on first base, and the hitter behind me was left-handed, so they kind of hit it that direction if they pull it, and this dude smashed a line drive as hard as you could hit one right on my face.
Wow.
And I just barely got out of the way because the ball kind of started tailing the direction I was moving.
Yikes.
And I would put my hand up to protect my face, and I got my face out of the way, but it hit my hand.
Ooh.
I don't know if you can see the bruise I got under my thumb there.
Yeah, it looks a little purple.
It somehow didn't hurt, like, at all. Everyone was, like, incredibly concerned, and I was just like, I think I'm fine, guys.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you made it.
I know. That would have done some serious damage to
me. Yeah, scary.
Yeah.
Man. Well, since you mentioned that, it just reminded me, I almost died recently, too.
What?
Yeah.
What happened?
So I've been, like, going for a lot of long walks, you know, trying to get my feet in shape for this trip. And I was at this crosswalk right near here, and there was this big truck that was, like, halfway into the crosswalk, you know?
Yeah.
Which is annoying.
Yep.
And as I was walking in front of it, it occurred to me, like, you know, this person probably can't see me. What if they just started moving? And then as I was thinking that, they started moving. And I had to, like, run out of the way and then look back and glare at the driver.
Was it, like, a pickup truck or, like, a big truck?
It was, like, a big industrial.
Okay.
I don't know what.
Damn.
Something big, yeah.
I'm glad you had that thought and you were aware.
Yeah. That's why you stop behind the crosswalk instead of driving into it so you can't even see it, you know?
Yep. Whenever I see people halfway in the crosswalk, I don't cross in front of them until I get eye contact. Because you know what you say, Jason?
You can't
you
trust
can't trust people.
That's what I always say.
Yep, yep.
I remember seeing some Instagram video, I think, where somebody actually, like, their whole shtick was they would go find a crosswalk where somebody was parked in it, and then they would just stand in front of that car and, like, shoo them back until they actually put their car in reverse and backed up behind the crosswalk.
Well, I think I told you about this. I don't remember what city it was. They put a bucket of bricks next to a crosswalk. And you pick up a brick.
Oh, yes.
And you cross the crosswalk and all the cars, like, back away.
I saw that, too.
I guess the idea is if they cross the crosswalk, you throw a brick at their car.
I like that.
That was awesome. It seemed to work so well.
Yeah. A good idea.
We should all just carry a brick around with us.
Is that the direction society is going? We all just need to carry deadly bludgeoning weapons?
Oh, no. 50 years from now, is there going to be a brick control movement? I shouldn't even go there. Why did I bring that up?
Let's get back into more lighthearted stuff.
Actually, yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation, but I think we have a lot to cover on this episode.
We do. Dude,
should you enlighten us of what we're talking about here, Jason?
Sure. Well, we got such a positive response to our Tokyo Day Trips episode, and I think at least a couple people mentioned, hey, it would be cool if you did one about day trips from Kyoto or Osaka. So that's what we're doing today. Day trips from Kyoto and Osaka. They're right next to each other. You can do kind of the same day trips from either one, so that's where we're going.
Yeah. We got quite a few to cover here, and so many interesting ones. It was one of those things where I was trying to decide, how deep do I go on each place to keep the episode under 2 hours long?
Right. I feel like with this kind of episode, I always take like a ton of notes for the first one, and then I'm like, I can't do that for every single one, or this is going to end up being 5 hours long.
Yeah, so like last time, we're going to briefly go over a few that we've done episodes on in the past, just to remind you. And to your point, I was doing the first one of those, and my notes were getting like a page long, and I was like, no, this is supposed to be a 2-minute recap.
Yeah.
I got to pare this down.
Yeah. Well, do we have time, do you think, to just recap some of the benefits of day trips? Is it worth getting into that a little?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say. I mean, so many people visit Kyoto, right? And why not? But while you're there, it makes so much sense to take a day or two, get out of the city, get somewhere a little more rural, see something not as crowded, something a little different. It can really add an experience nature-wise, culturally-wise, that you might not otherwise get.
Totally. I really like the not crowded places. That's always nice.
Yeah.
It's also just nice to have kind of a home base, like not having to worry about changing hotels all the time, having a neighborhood that you can kind of start to get comfortable in, you know?
Yeah. I'm becoming more and more of a day trip fan.
Yeah, I'm excited for, I mean, we're doing a bunch of day trips on this upcoming trip.
We are.
I'm very excited about.
We are. We're actually going to be going places that we talk about today.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should we keep that a surprise or?
What, the which ones we're going to be going to?
Which ones we're about to see?
I don't know. I was thinking we'd mention, like, we're going to have a lot more to say about these in a month or so.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, so starting with the recaps, are we going to try to keep these at 2 minutes again?
I don't mind if we go over. I have stuff. I just want to say all my stuff. I don't care if it's more than 2 minutes, but.
Okay. Well, the first place is Nara.
Yeah.
Episode 112, all about Nara. It's about 1 hour-ish from both Kyoto and Osaka, depending on which way you're going.
I think less than an hour even.
Probably.
Pretty close. It's a super popular day trip. It's kind of one of the more obvious ones, maybe, one that you've probably heard of. Just south of Kyoto, just east of Osaka. If you've heard of Nara, you've probably heard about the friendly deer that you can meet there in Nara Park. That's super fun. And an experience that you can't really have many other places, especially in the U.S.
Yeah.
But Nara's not just about friendly deer, right, Paul?
No. Tons of history there, too.
Yeah, Nara is also the ancient capital of Japan. It's got a bunch of amazing temples and shrines. And, I mean, if you get to explore amazing temples and shrines and be surrounded by deer at the same time, that's pretty cool.
Yes.
I would even say that Nara might deserve more than just a day trip. But, of course, that's up to you.
Yeah, it's a fantastic day trip, but it's also a great multi-day destination as well.
Yep. Ready for the next one?
Yeah, you got through that pretty quick. Nice.
All right. Next city is Hiroshima. This is a city down the coast quite a ways from Kyoto and Osaka. It takes 1.5 to 2 hours to get there by bullet train. I did a day trip to Hiroshima on my first trip to Japan, and I had a great time, but this is another one where I kind of feel like Hiroshima deserves more than a single day. Of course, if you're just trying to squeeze in as much as you possibly can and you really want to get to Hiroshima, you know, you totally should. But there's so much to see. You'll probably want to visit the Atomic Bomb Dome in the Peace Memorial Park if you want to learn more about the atomic bomb that was dropped in 1945. That's kind of all I saw on my day trip there. And I got some Hiroshima-style okonomiyaki, of course. But I would also really recommend Hiroshima Castle. It's beautiful. And then down the street from that, Shukkeien is a really amazing garden that they have. Really pretty. That's one of my favorite gardens.
If you're into cars, you should visit the Mazda Museum located in Hiroshima. Looks like a really cool place.
Another super popular attraction down there is Miyajima. Beautiful island in Hiroshima Bay. Got a lot of temples and shrines there scattered among amazing natural scenery. Really pretty place.
Yeah, and also another place known for friendly deer.
Yeah,
which is interesting. They both made this list because those are the only two places I know that have friendly deer.
Yeah, good point.
And Miyajima is home to the iconic floating torii gate, that you see pictures of everywhere.
Yeah.
That's where you go to see site. That.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of hiking there. I think you could stay overnight there. It gets really quiet after the last ferry leaves and is a really peaceful place.
Uh-huh. If you want to hear all about Hiroshima and Miyajima and all the stuff you can see and do there, we did a whole episode about that, episode 118.
Next up is Kobe, which was episode 96. It is within an hour of both Osaka and Kyoto. Right along the Pacific coast, just a little bit west of Osaka.
We also talked about it in our trip recap from last year, episode 114. We spent a day in Kobe.
Yeah, and it was fantastic.
It really was. I feel like Kobe is underappreciated. You know, most people probably associate it with Kobe beef, but the city itself is really awesome too. So much to see and do. I think I even enjoyed Kobe more than I've enjoyed Osaka, frankly. I don't mean to hate on Osaka. I know, Paul, you're a big fan. And I mean, there's a lot of great stuff about Osaka, too. But I really liked Kobe. I don't know.
That's fair. Kobe was awesome. I have nothing bad to say about Kobe at all. You got the port area, Maritime Museum, Kawasaki Museum, Port Tower, little earthquake memorial, some shopping malls.
Chinatown was pretty cool.
Yep.
We saw those historic Western-style mansions.
Yep.
The Kobe beef, I did try that, and it was amazing, and I highly recommend it. But you don't need to go to Kobe for that.
Okay, that one falafel burger I had was pretty good, too.
Sure.
And then the ropeway. The Shin Kobe ropeway goes up one of the mountains on the outskirts of town and brings you to an herb garden.
The herb garden was incredible. We were there when the sakura were blooming. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And then the hike down past Nunobiki Falls, that was really cool.
Yep.
We didn't get up to Arima Onsen. That's kind of on the other side of one of those mountains. Sounds like that would be a great place to spend a half day as well.
Absolutely. Well, time for the new stuff now.
Yeah.
So the first one on our list is Uji, which is about 30 minutes south-southeast, I believe, of Kyoto. It is famous since the 1200s for its high-quality green tea. So the tradition goes way back. The other famous draw in the city is Byodoin Temple, which is home to the Phoenix Hall, which is famously on the back of the 10 yen coin.
It's beautiful. I feel like that place is very striking and photogenic. And that temple dates back to 998. It was built as a villa for a powerful member of the Fujiwara clan.
And did you know the Phoenix Hall is original?
Is it?
It hasn't been reconstructed.
Wow. I don't think I did realize that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a museum and a garden there as well. Yep. And a pretty cool gift shop, as I recall.
Yeah.
Another really cool thing about this temple is the street leading up to it. Because, as Paul mentioned, Uji is famous for its green tea. And this street has all sorts of green tea related items, like everything you could possibly imagine. Of course, you can get high quality tea, but you can also get tea ware, teapots and tea cups, tons of tea infused foods. We had some green tea soba noodles. They have green tea pancakes and alcoholic beverages of various types and just all sorts of stuff.
It kind of seemed like they had all the normal Japanese food you would see on a shopping street, but everything had green tea in it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you like green tea, this is the perfect place for a day trip.
I got some powdered green tea mix that was used to make iced tea.
That was good.
Yeah, that was great.
I would like to get more of that.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of other green tea places in Uji that you can enjoy. There's a nearby public tea house called Taihoan. Have you heard of that, Paul?
No.
That's where you can participate in an authentic tea ceremony. There are a bunch of other places around where you can learn about and sample tea.
Yeah.
I was kind of curious to see what else is in Uji because, Paul, when you and I visited there, we pretty much just walked down that street. We went to Byodoin and then we headed back to Kyoto. But there's some other famous temples and shrines that sound pretty cool.
Yeah, agreed. I was not surprised finding these, but I always wondered, what else is in Uji? One that looked cool was Manpukuji. I also saw some sources call it Manpukuji, and I couldn't... I saw it both ways.
What's the difference between the two things you just said?
M-A-M versus M-A-N. I feel like I saw both spellings. I didn't know which one is correct.
Well, that makes sense when you look at the Japanese, because there's like a sound in Japanese that's N, and it's usually translated to English as N, but it can also be translated as an M. Like in tempura, technically it's ten, T-E-N, pura, but you see it written in English as T-E-M, pura, tempura.
Yeah.
And when you try to say it, it's kind of the same thing. Tempura, tempura. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So anyway.
Anyways. Yeah,
that sounds like a cool place. It was built in, let me say it again, Manpukuji. Built in 1661, it was the head temple of the Zen Obaku sect, which came over from China in 1654. Did you look at pictures?
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool that like the architecture is a little different from most Japanese temples. You can see the Chinese influence there. It was influenced by the contemporary Ming Dynasty architecture.
Yep.
Also thought it was interesting that after the temple was founded, the head priests were all Chinese for 13 generations.
Oh, wow. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. I kept going. I dug a little deeper. This is where I just kept going, you know? There are cultural activities you can participate in there, like guided meditation and sutra copying, and you can try something called hucha ryori.
What's that?
So you've heard of shojin ryori, right?
Yep.
The vegetarian Buddhist temple food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a Chinese version of that. It was brought over by the temple's founder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds like you need to get a reservation to try that, but that would be interesting to see how different that is from the Japanese version.
Right. Did you see that the temple grounds were laid out in the shape of a dragon?
Yep, yep, I sure did.
I pulled up Google Maps. I couldn't really see it.
I did the exact same thing.
So I don't know if the trees have grown in or there's new buildings around it that change the shape or
what. I bet
what.
It's pretty abstract. Like if you were to see an overlay of a dragon and be like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
Like the constellations are, you know, that's a lion up there.
Right.
Like, yeah,
right,
sure, buddy.
Right. But it looked pretty symmetrical. That like reminded me of Chinese, you know, the way that Chinese religious places are set up, right? Or
yeah.
Government places. Isn't it all about symmetry in China and the feng shui, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Another temple I thought looked really cool is Mimiro Toji. Did you hear about that?
I did.
Also known as the Flower Temple.
Yeah. It's 1,200 years old and has different flowers blooming at many times of the year. I saw specifically sakura in April, azaleas in May, hydrangeas in June, and lotuses in July and August, which is really cool.
And then you get the fall colors too.
Yep, yep. So over half the year, they've got some amazing thing blooming for you.
That's awesome. It's got a very nice looking pagoda too.
Did you hear about the ox and the rabbit?
Nope.
There's a statue of an ox and a rabbit out front of the main hall. And if you touch the stone ball in the ox's mouth, it's believed to lead you to victories in your endeavors.
Okay.
But the rabbit's a little more interesting. There's a stone sphere in front of the rabbit, and you reach your hand in there, and there's an egg-like object. And if it's standing up straight, your wish will be granted. But if it's lying on its side, your wish apparently won't be granted.
This is where?
Right in front of the main hall. It's a.
What do you reach into?
There's a little sphere in front of the statue of the rabbit. A
sphere in front of the statue.
Yeah, well, I assume with a hand hole.
And there's an egg-shaped thing in there?
Yeah.
I have so many questions. Like, can you grab this egg thing and pull it out? Or do you just have to feel around in there and see what position it's in? Like, why wouldn't...
That's what I was wondering. Is it, like, in a permanent position? Or is it, like...
Does it move?
The person in front of you predicts your luck.
Yeah.
Like, the person in front of you leaves it on the side. Like, haha, buddy.
I mean, if it can actually be moved, I would be afraid someone would steal it.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's a sacred place. No one would do that, right, Jason?
I mean... It's less likely in Japan than here, but...
Yeah, I have questions too. I want to go do it someday.
Okay, well, let's go back to Uji one day. There are other temples and shrines in Uji too, but if you're thinking about doing a day trip from Kyoto, I would suggest you might want to consider how many temples and shrines you really want to see, because, I mean, in this part of the country, there are just so many temples and shrines, and some people, you know, get templed and shrined out, and once you see 20 of them, it's like, I've had enough, let's go do something else.
Yes. Well, speaking of temples, our next place to visit here is Koyasan.
Koyasan is awesome.
I have to plead my ignorance here. I'd heard of Koyasan a lot, but I'd never looked into it.
Really?
Partly because I heard, oh, it's the place you go for temple lodging. And I'm like, well, I could do that anywhere. If I ever want to do that, I'll find a place. So I never really looked. I also heard like, oh, it's easy to get to from Kyoto. So I was surprised at where it actually was.
It's not that easy to get to.
No,
I don't think it's easy to get to from anywhere.
I only realized that talking to you like a month or two ago or something. It came up and you were like, that's not right outside Kyoto. And I was like, what? I looked it up and it's about 2+ hours southeast of Osaka, even farther from Kyoto.
Right. So let me lay out the basics here. Koyasan is a beautiful little temple town in the mountains of Wakayama Prefecture, south of Osaka, on the Kii Peninsula. And the reason it takes a bit of effort and a bit of time to get here is because it's pretty rural. It's not just even trains that will get you there. You have to take a cable car and then a bus in addition to the trains. I stayed here for a night in 2019, I believe it was. And it was tougher to get here than most of the other places I went, but it's worth it. And it's not that big of a deal. And like, it's a touristy enough place that, you know, there are people there to kind of guide you and make sure you don't get lost on the way there or whatever. But it's great. Like, I had so much fun there. The whole place is really stunning, really amazing temples, just stuck in nature. You know, it kind of might remind you of parts of Kyoto, but it's a little more secluded. You're up in the mountains and stuff.
Yeah, I got a little bit about the history. Okay. Once I got into this, I was like, okay, this place is fascinating.
You want to go now, you're saying?
Yeah, it's on the list now.
All right.
It won me over. So Koyasan was founded by Kobo Daishi, who was a very famous monk in Japan. He had been wandering the country for years in search of a suitable spot to found his religion.
He's come up in several history sections of other episodes, I believe.
Yeah, he's the founder of Shingon Buddhism. So in 826, he finally decided, this is the spot, and founded Koyasan. And since then, over 100 temples have popped up in the town, which is crazy.
One big highlight for me there was Okunoin Cemetery. This is the largest and most sacred cemetery in Japan. It's got over 200,000 tombstones, and the atmosphere in there is incredible. Like, I went out there in the middle of the night, too, and it's got these lanterns, and it's just the coolest atmosphere.
I knew you'd love that place. That does sound really cool.
Yeah.
I also thought it was very interesting that it said that Kobo never died. He's just in eternal meditation as he waits the coming of the future Buddha.
Right. When you get to the end of the cemetery, that's where he's...
He's got a mausoleum there where he's in his eternal meditation.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was really cool, too.
Yeah.
So Koyasan would be a really fun day trip. It's a commonly recommended one. But again, I'm going to recommend, like, if you can, if you have the time, spend a night. It's so much fun. You can eat that traditional Buddhist vegetarian cuisine that I mentioned earlier. You can attend the prayer ceremony in the morning. You can hang out in the cemetery in the middle of the night. That's awesome. But maybe I'm just weird. I don't know.
All right, next destination we have for you is Himeji, famous for Himeji Castle.
Himeji is just down the coast a bit, west from Kobe. It takes about an hour to get there from Osaka or Kyoto. So we actually talked about Himeji Castle recently in our episode where we rated Japan's top attractions.
Yeah, we did.
And it got second place, I believe, out of 11. So maybe that gives you an idea of how cool this place is.
Right.
It's the most well-preserved castle in Japan and arguably the most beautiful of the only 12 original castles still in existence in the whole country. So if you like castles, this is a great day trip.
Yeah. It's really cool that so much of the grounds is preserved, so you get to see all the defensive stuff. When you climb all the way to the top of the castle and look down, you can see that there are no straight paths anywhere leading to the castle. Everything zigs and zags you and turns you around, so it'd be incredibly hard to storm. I just love looking at all those details that we've learned about on these castles.
Totally. And on the inside too, the inside is really well preserved. Like a lot of castles these days are just filled with museums, but this one, like, you can kind of see what it looked like back when it was still a fortress.
Yeah.
Coquelin Garden is right next to the main keep. That's a popular attraction in its own right.
Yeah, it's a newer garden, only opened in 1992, but there's 9 different garden designs inside, which is crazy. I saw there's like a bamboo garden, there's a flower garden, and a bunch of other kinds too. So I suppose there's one that looks great all year round, right?
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
So when we visited Himeji, we basically just went to the castle and then got some food somewhere and then headed back to wherever where were we staying? Was that back to Kyoto again?
I think that might have been the day we went to Jean Street too, right?
Oh, right.
So I think we stopped in Himeji first.
No, I thought it was Jean Street first, maybe, and then Himeji, maybe, and then back to Kyoto.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I was kind of looking around the city a bit more because I was like, there's got to be more than just this castle, right? And I found some interesting stuff.
Okay.
Have you heard about Mount Shosha?
Just a little bit.
Okay. This is a mountain on the north edge of the city. It's got an amazing temple complex on top. This temple is called Engyoji. You know anything about Engyoji?
No.
Well, it looks really awesome for one thing. I mean, again, you're on this mountain. You know, it's really peaceful and atmospheric with the nature all around. It kind of reminds me of Koya-san. But another really interesting thing about this place is that it doesn't have any modern stuff around ruining the scenery, like electrical boxes and signs and whatever, that kind of stuff. It kind of feels more natural. And because of that, it's a popular filming location for historical shows and movies. A part of the movie The Last Samurai was filmed here. Remember that one? Tom Cruise?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can hike up to the temple and get some pretty nice views along the way, or you can take a ropeway to get there to save some time. That seemed like a fun place to visit.
Nice.
Another one that stuck out to me is right by the station, there's an Azuki Bean Museum.
Oh, what? That's cool.
It's called the Azuki Museum. It's about Azuki beans, those red beans that they make into red bean paste and other things, very popular in Japanese desserts and things. I didn't see much English at this place, so you might need to have your translation app up or whatever, but it sounds interesting. And they have a really cute mascot for this place. It's like a girl with a bean around her head, or maybe her head is a bean and it's got a little face on it. It's kind of hard to tell exactly what's going on.
Okay, that's cool.
That was fun. A bit north from the station, there's a Japan Toy Museum. You can see toys from like centuries back all the way up to the modern day.
Nice.
That would be cool. Last place I have, this just seemed kind of bizarre to me. There's a place called Taiyo Park on the northwest edge of the city. Have you heard about this?
No.
It's a theme park with replicas of famous structures from around the world.
Okay.
Does that remind you of anything?
That sounds familiar.
Sounds like Tobu World Square, right?
Yeah.
But this one actually has some life-size replicas.
Of what?
They have China's Terracotta Army.
What?
They have, tell me if I'm pronouncing this right, Neuschwanstein Castle. Is that how you say that? You studied German?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say probably not quite, but I probably couldn't say any better at this point.
Okay. They have the Easter Island statues, you know, the big heads.
Oh, wow.
But what's bizarre about it is it's like kind of remote. It takes some effort to get there, and it sounds kind of run down and not super well maintained, which kind of makes it a little bit more interesting to me. Like, it just seems kind of weird. One review I read described it as, quote, surreal, kitschy, macabre, beautiful, and disturbing.
It's an interesting grouping of adjectives.
I find that incredibly intriguing, personally.
Okay.
And to make it even a little bit weirder, there's apparently a nursing home right next to it. Can you imagine, like, someone with dementia waking up and seeing, like, a giant castle, a Western castle, or, like, the pyramids out the window and be like, what's going on? Where am I?
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right, next up, we got Okayama and Kurashiki. These are two adjacent cities just a bit further west along the coast from Himeji. It takes about an hour to get there from Kyoto or Osaka. In Okayama, you can see Okayama Castle, which is not an original castle, but it's still very pretty. It's got a very unique look to it. Did you look at pictures?
Yeah, it's got that black exterior.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah. Right across the river from there, you could also see Korakuen Garden, which is extremely famous, one of the three best landscape gardens in Japan.
Yep.
Do you know which gardens are the other two of the top three?
I didn't put it in my notes. I feel like we've done too many top threes.
Kenrokuen in Kanazawa and Kairakuen in Mito.
Okay.
In case anyone was wondering. And guess what this garden, Korakuen, uses as borrowed scenery, Paul?
Okayama Castle.
You got it.
Love that.
For sure. Here's another fun fact about Okayama. Did you know that Okayama is the area where the Momotaro folktale is supposed to have taken place?
Yes.
We just read that recently.
Yep. That was cool fun. That came back up.
Yeah. So you see references to that legend all over the city. There's actually a statue of Momotaro right outside Okayama Station, and it's even got the dog, the monkey, and the pheasant.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard you could see little references to it kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the Momotaro jeans, but we'll get to that in a second.
Sure. Another cool place is the Kibi Plain. It's a rural flatland just outside the city, and you can rent a bicycle and ride along a stretch that brings you past some historic sites and a shrine and a bunch of fields of rice and other things growing. It sounds like a really pleasant cycling trip.
Nice.
17 kilometers.
Awesome.
And it starts at a train station and ends at a train station too, so very easy to get to.
Do you know if there are places you can rent bikes around there?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes, I think at either station you can rent bikes.
Awesome, perfect.
Yeah.
Is that all you got for Okayama?
Yes.
Okay. In Kurashiki, well, for one thing, you could visit Jean Street.
Yep.
This area is known for its denim industry, and they make some of the best jeans in the world. So at Jean Street, you can check out a bunch of denim shops. You can get some of those Momotaro jeans. They have a Momotaro store next to, I believe, the Momotaro factory is right by there, too. And you'll see references to jeans all over this street, right, Paul?
Yes, it's so cool. The denim-covered taxi, even.
The denim ice cream. They got jeans hanging over the streets from, like, clotheslines.
Yeah.
Got vending machines that are all covered in denim stuff.
It's
we had
really
a lot
cool.
of fun there. Yeah. And we got our little matching denim bracelets.
Yep. Yeah, still got mine.
Me too. What if you're not into jeans, Paul? What else can you do in Kurashiki?
Well, it's an old merchant town. It was an important rice distribution center. So there is a canal area in the center of town that dates back to the Edo period. It has a bunch of old storehouses turned into museums and cafes and shops. Kind of look like a cool area.
Yeah, this area is known as the Beacon Historical Quarter, and it just looks beautiful. Like you said, you got the canal, you got the storehouses, there are weeping willows. Like, I don't know, all the pictures I saw just look really, it just looks like a really pleasant place to take a stroll and relax. And
even the name of the city, apparently Kurashiki can roughly be translated, for what that's worth, as Town of Storehouses.
Sure. Kura is a storehouse.
There you go.
We talked about that in the Kawagoe episode. They got all those Kura, the Kurazukuri Museum there, I think.
Okay.
There's also a Western art museum that caught my eye, the Ohara Museum. If you're into Western art, they got stuff from Picasso, Matisse, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec, Jackson Pollock. Heard
nice.
Of him, right?
Nice.
Also near the canal, they have the Ohashi House. Did you hear about the Ohashi House?
No, I don't think so.
The Ohashi family lived there. They were a super rich merchant family in the area, and they built this house in 1796. But what's really interesting about it is that they built it in the architectural style of a samurai house.
Okay.
Normally, merchants couldn't do that, right?
Yeah, how'd they get away with that?
They were just so rich, apparently. So like normal merchant houses would be right up against the street, but here they have a front gate and then a kind of rock garden sort of thing. And then the, houses, you know, further back from the street. So,
wow, interesting.
Yeah, it's supposed to, apparently it just goes to show how much power they had, that they were allowed to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Must have greased some palms there.
Yeah. Ready to talk about Kurama and Kibune?
Before we do, I just have to say, well done, Jason. These two were not on my list, but they're freaking awesome.
They do look pretty cool.
So kudos to you for for finding these ones.
I will take those kudos.
So Kurama and Kibune are small towns about 30 minutes north of Kyoto in the mountains.
I would more call them villages, I think, from the pictures I saw. Like, town makes you think, I don't know, like it's got a bunch of streets interconnecting with stores and stuff, but it felt like more like kind of little villages hidden in the forest. That's how it felt to me.
Okay, okay.
I don't know. What sense did you get?
I mean, small town and village, to me, there's not necessarily always a ton of difference.
All right.
But yeah, small town could be like 20,000. They're not 20,000.
I think of villages as more rustic.
Okay.
I think rustic is how I would describe these places, maybe.
Fair enough. So the main draw probably to Kurama is Kuramadera, a Buddhist temple on the steep slopes of the mountainside. It's about a 30 to 45 minute hike up from the main part of town. But there's a cable car that leads halfway up if you'd like a shortcut.
I think both Kurama and Kibune have a bunch of temples and shrines, and that might be kind of the main things that they're maybe known for. And like we said before, like maybe if you've explored a bunch of Kyoto, maybe you're sick of temples and shrines. But one big reason I wanted to talk about these is because I see a lot of people asking for recommendations for ryokan in or around Kyoto, and I think this might be a really good place to look.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can find ryokan in Kyoto, but then you're still in the big city, you know? I think a lot of people want a more rustic, rural, intimate experience in a ryokan, perhaps. And, you know, this area is more secluded, a little more peaceful and quiet. I think it would be a really cool place to stay.
Absolutely. I always go look at a picture. So I try, like, let me see what this temple looks like. And I ended up just like looking at pictures for 15 minutes because it's just gorgeous in the mountains.
The temples are just all, the
just
whole
the
thing.
Temples. I ended up looking at other stuff too. The whole area is just amazing. Everything looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Kurama Onsen is supposedly the best onsen in the Kyoto area. And if you're looking for a ryokan, there are a bunch of them along the Kibune River. And looking through all the pictures, this is what really caught my eye, Paul. I kept seeing that a lot of these ryokan, or even just other restaurants, I think, have these outdoor eating areas where you're like sitting on a platform on top of the river.
I saw that. Yes.
It looks so awesome.
Looks amazing.
You get to hear the sounds of nature around you while you eat. And after dark, they have all these lanterns. It's all lit up and stuff. It looks magical. That's the only word I have for it. It's magical.
Yes. They do take the platforms down in the winter, but otherwise, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you're like on top of the river. Like these platforms span the river and just like a foot below you are, you know, the babbling
rocks and the water. The water.
I was trying to think of a more poetic way to say it. I don't know.
And did you know Kibune was founded by a water goddess?
No. But that's awesome.
Yeah, she came from the ocean and went up the river and stopped there, apparently.
Okay.
That was the spot.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, during the day, you can explore the temples and shrines, and there's a hike that you can do between Kurama and Kibune. We didn't mention that yet, right, Paul?
Yeah.
So the hike takes you around Mount Kurama, which is what separates these two villages, and it only takes like 2.5 to 3 hours. At a leisurely pace, I saw. And I feel like if you're in that area, you'd want to take a leisurely pace. This is like a nice place to relax and just really soak in the scenery and stuff.
I'm incapable of taking a leisurely pace, Jason. It's something I've been working on for years.
I guess that's true, huh?
Limited success.
Well, once you've been to Japan 10 more times and you feel like, you know, you've seen the big stuff, then maybe we can slow down a little bit and...
Yeah, once I'm in Japan 10 more times, I probably will be a little bit slower than I am now.
One last fun fact I found about Mount Kurama. It said that Tengu lived there.
Oh,
yeah.
Those long-nosed demons.
That's right. And outside Kurama Station, there's a big Tengu statue with the giant red nose.
Nice.
It's a huge red nose, man. It's huge.
That's awesome. Next up, we got a piece of the Nakasendo, the ancient highway between Kyoto and Tokyo, or Edo at the time.
One of the ancient trails. This was like the inland trail
yes.
that went through the mountains instead of the Tokaido Trail, which goes along the coast.
Yep. We're specifically talking about the Magome to Sumago section of the trail.
We did this together in 2016.
Yes.
And it was...
amazing.
Awesome. Okay. Amazing. Awesome was the other A word.
Yeah.
It was both of those.
How long is this from Kyoto? We came from the other direction.
We came to Magome from
Tokyo, I think, right?
Tokyo, right. We did this on a day trip. Well, we did this in a day when we were going from Tokyo to Kyoto.
Yes.
I saw this going to take about 2.5 to 3 hours to get to Magome from Kyoto, I think.
Okay, it sounds about right.
Yeah. But, you know, if you start early, that's plenty of time to get out there and do the hike and come back. And, yeah, at 2.5 to 3 hours, that might be kind of stretching it for a day trip, you might think. But I'd say it's totally worth it. This is one of my favorite experiences I've had in Japan.
Yeah, agreed. It's absolutely fantastic.
You get a sense of rural Japan and what it might have looked like a long time ago. You get mountain views. The post towns are really cool.
Yes.
Like, there are all these little towns where travelers would have stopped to rest as they're walking between Tokyo and Kyoto hundreds of years ago, and they're really well preserved, and it just feels like going back in time. You can walk where a samurai walked hundreds of years ago, which is just really cool to think about, you know?
Yep.
Like, oh, these samurai saw exactly these same sights that we're seeing now. That's just kind of a cool thought, I think.
Yeah. I mean, immediately out of the cab we took from the train station, I was just like, wow, this is incredible. And it never let up.
Yep.
It's awesome. About 8 kilometers between the villages.
Is it that far?
Yeah.
Man.
But 8 kilometers isn't that far. It's like 4.5 miles or something.
Yeah.
It's about 2 to 3 hours, again, at a leisurely pace. So it's not going to take you all day to hike.
Yeah, not strenuous at all. Yep. I got a little sweaty, but that's normal for me.
Yep. It's rural, though, so hike in pairs or bring a bear bell.
They have some bear bells like on the side of the path, too.
Yeah.
Next up, we're going to head northeast of Kyoto a little bit. There's a huge lake called Lake Biwa, and Hikone is a city on the eastern edge of this lake. Takes about 1 hour to 1.5 hours to get there by train. Maybe faster if you take the bullet train. There are a lot of different options. I mean, for all of these, you're going to have different ways to get there that will take different amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
Hikone has a castle, which is one of the 12 originals.
Yeah.
It's also one of the only 5 castles that are designated as national treasures. Did you know mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
There are also 2 gardens right next to the castle that look really nice. I think I'm maybe even more excited about the road that leads up to the castle. It's got recreations of Edo-era buildings and just interesting-looking shops. I kind of love streets like that where you can just wander around and, like, every shop has something interesting to look at.
Yeah. Seems like one of those places.
Yeah. So, are we spoiling our trip? This is one of the places that we're going on our upcoming trip, but we're doing a day trip from Nagoya.
Yes. I'm really excited to see the castle. I mean, the original castle always excites me.
Yeah.
I didn't find a great picture of it, but I heard there's like a really cool part of the approach to the main part of the castle is like a swirling path, and then there's a bridge that they can collapse on command leading to the keep.
What?
I want to see it from above.
Oh, you're talking about like the spiral, like the way that they defended the castle.
Yeah.
Like they had a swirly, weird path to get to the keep.
Yes, exactly.
It was more easily defended.
Yes.
Okay, I was confused. I thought you were talking about, I don't know, something
else. Sorry, maybe I didn't make that clear. But that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, that does sound cool.
I'm also really excited for the garden.
Yeah.
Genkyoen.
There are two gardens, right?
I don't know. I saw Genkyoen.
There are two gardens.
Okay. Well, this one excited me because it's one of those pond gardens that has islands scattered about it and bridges going to the islands. I feel like that's one of my favorite designs of Japanese gardens, where you have the islands with the bridges. I love in Japanese gardens the way they landscape everything kind of in a miniature way to look like bigger scenery. But I also love when there's man-made things like a bridge that's done that blends in and adds to the scenery. I think that's really artistic and beautiful.
Yeah. Do you know if you can walk across these bridges? I feel like a lot of time those little ones are roped off.
I didn't see, but I'm hoping at least one.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll see. We'll report back.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the other garden?
There are two right next to each other. I don't have my phone on me, but
okay.
If you look it up on Google Maps.
There's another garden right next to it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're, I mean, they're pretty much connected. You could probably think of them as one. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Fair enough. That happens a lot.
Okay. I grabbed my phone and looked it up. There's Genkyoen. That's the one you mentioned, right, Paul?
Yes.
And then next to it, there's Rakurakuen, which is another garden.
Cool. Two gardens for the price of one, which probably isn't true. You might have to pay for both. But
we'll see. We'll report back. Oh, admission is free to Rakurakuen.
Let's go.
Paul, I got another fun fact about the castle for you.
Okay.
Did you know it used to be right on the shore of Lake Biwa?
No.
Yeah. These days, it's about a kilometer away because they filled in part of the lake to create more land.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. This next place is another place that we're going to be visiting on our upcoming trip, and that is Omihachiman. This is another city on the edge of Lake Biwa. This one's right between Kyoto and Hikone, and we're going to try to fit this in to the same day as Hikone.
Yes. It's going to be tight, but we have the advantage of everything in Hikone is right next to each other that we want to see.
Yeah.
So hopefully it goes kind of quick.
Yeah. So Omihachiman has a historic canal area. Lots of interesting stuff around there. You can get boat rides down this beautiful canal. Looks very romantic. Paul, are we going to do that? We're going to stare into each other's eyes as we float down.
I wouldn't be opposed. I was thinking maybe hiking along. I think there's little walking paths next to the canal.
Why not both?
Sure. Maybe when we come back in the evening, do they do like a lantern boat ride at night?
Wouldn't it be just even more romantic with the sunset?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The Kawara Museum looks interesting. I'm kind of interested in that. It's dedicated to traditional roof tiles.
Yes, that looks really cool.
Yeah.
There's actually like a bunch of small, kind of odd museums in this town.
They have some residences, like old Edo-era residences you can explore too that are kind of converted to museums or something.
Yeah.
We're also going to be taking a ropeway to the Hachimanyama Castle Ruins. From what I hear, the ruins themselves aren't super impressive, but the views from up there are supposed to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, so somehow there's a mountain between the lake and the town. Just like right there, there's a little mountain. So you go to the top and you can see the lake on one side. You can see the town on the other side. There's a temple up there. And it only takes about 20 minutes to walk around the whole top and see all the views.
Nice.
Yeah.
I also found an interesting story behind the castle that used to be there.
Yeah.
You know about that?
Yes.
You want to tell it?
Sure. So the town was originally developed as a castle town for a castle built by Toyotomi Hideyoshi's nephew.
In the late 1500s.
Yes. And eventually, Hideyoshi ordered his nephew to commit ritual suicide for allegedly plotting a coup. So that ended him, but the town continued to thrive.
But the castle was torn down after only 10 years because of the nephew having to commit seppuku.
Yeah, yeah. Got to tear down those castles of those rebellious lords, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Can't let them hold on to defensible locations like that.
Glad the town survived, though.
Yep.
So the last thing we're going to try to squeeze in here is Fujigasaki Ryu Shrine, which is this gorgeous shrine built into the cliffs right along Lake Biwa. It just looks like a really quiet, beautiful, kind of like sacred feeling place.
It does look really cool. I'm hoping actually that's where we're going to be at sunset. I think that would be really awesome.
Yeah. The only downside to this place is that there doesn't seem to be a public transport option. So you either got to try to find a cab or rent a car or just walk the 7 kilometers from town.
Probably going to walk, right?
We're going to walk. Yeah, we're going to walk.
Next place we got to talk about is Amano Hashidate. This is a sandbar. It's apparently one of Japan's 3 most scenic views.
Yes.
So this is a ways north and a little bit west from Kyoto or Osaka. It's actually on the Sea of Japan side of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes 2 to 3 hours to get there. Again, we're kind of stretching the limits of what, you know, is a reasonable day trip at this point, but...
But I'll let it go because there's not anywhere else that's easier to get to this place from than Kyoto.
Is that right?
As far as I can tell. Like, no other place that you're likely to be is easier to get here from.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mentioned it's a sandbar, right? It's a really pretty and famous sandbar. It's covered in pine trees, and there are mountains at either end of it that you can view it from. So you can walk around and check it out. You could rent a bike, which would be really fun. You can even swim on the white sand beaches there on the sandbar.
Yeah. Just an amazing nature spot. It is quite the view.
Yeah.
I can see why it's so famous.
Yeah. I would love to go to Amano Hashidate, but I think I would be even more excited about another place right nearby.
Oh, yeah?
You know where that is?
I'm going to say Ine.
It is Ine.
This place caught my eye a while back, yeah.
I've had this on my list for years. There's no, like, I've never been nearby in a place where it's like, oh, yeah, let me just swing over to Ine.
Right.
This is a small fishing town. It's just a little bit north of the sandbar. And it's one of those places where you see a picture and you're like, I need to go there. That's what happened to me. I saw a picture and I'm like, that's incredible. Where is that? Oh, it's in Japan. Oh, it's near Kyoto. Okay, I'm going to go there someday.
Yeah. So what's so special about it is the funaya, which are boathouses. So they're built on the edge of the sea, and the bottom level is basically a garage for their boat. And then the house is built up on top of that.
They're like on stilts. Like they're hanging out over the water. That's what's so cool about them, is like just the whole edge of this part of the sea is just... all these little boat houses crammed together, and they're like all wooden and old fashioned looking. And
yeah,
it's, I don't know.
There's a couple hundred of them. Like, it's really cool.
Looks really cool. You can even spend a night in some of them, apparently.
Yes.
And there are also sightseeing boat tours around the bay. So you can.
Yeah, that seems really cool. That'd be the best place to view them from, obviously, is the water.
Yeah.
So just throwing this out there, you kept talking about us going to Tottori.
Mm-hmm.
And we were even talking about taking the Sunrise Express.
Right.
Maybe we, from Tottori, we head kind of northeast along the coast. And maybe it's not too far to get to like Ine and Amano Hashidate. And then we come back through Kyoto. Just throwing that out there. I know we're a couple years away from our next trip.
You said I was in charge of planning the next one. So
I'm just giving you ideas.
Okay.
It's your choice.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Well, I already had things in my head.
Okay, fair enough.
And I don't want to spoil it, but that was actually a lot of what was in my head already.
Oh, so I can't claim I gave you the idea.
Exactly.
Oh, come on. Give it to me.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, now we're just going to do something else. I'm scrapping it just
can't
because...
can't even do it because fine. All right, I won't mention anything else cool or it'll get kicked from our list.
That's right. I'm doing this all by myself next time. Planning the whole thing. No input from Paul.
Jason's a big boy. He can do it all by himself.
That's right. Is this the last place we're talking about, Paul?
Yeah, okay. We did a good job. Keeping that down. That could have went longer.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot to talk about here.
Well, and I have some surprise stuff to add on to the
end.
Oh,
no. I was researching this, and I was like, I know I've got more than enough to talk about, so I didn't add anything. But I could have, probably.
Yeah, me too. I tried to keep it short. Because we're spending quite a bit of time in this next place on our trip.
Yes, let's talk about Nagoya. That's another place we are about to visit.
Japan's fourth largest city. It's located east of Kyoto and Osaka, past Hikone and Lake Biwa. It's about 30 minutes from Kyoto, about an hour from Osaka. That's what I saw.
Yep.
So what place are you most excited to visit in Nagoya, Paul?
Oh, man, just making me rank things immediately.
Well, if there was like one thing that attracted you to this city, because you planned this part of the trip, like this was your idea. So tell me why it was your idea. Why did it attract you?
I'm getting out of the mindset of attractions and into the mindset of experiences.
Okay.
The breakfast culture.
I am super excited about that.
Yeah. So the culture here is that you go out for coffee in the morning and they give you free food.
Yeah. I can't resist like digging into this a little bit more because I just thought this was really cool. Did I come up with this or did you find out about this? I don't remember who.
Miyuki told us about this.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe. I don't know. But basically what happened is there were all these coffee shops that sprung up in Nagoya and they started like some of them started offering toast or little snacks or whatever along with their coffee. And then they started like competing and they started offering more elaborate toast. It's like, oh, we got this toast where we cut it up and put different toppings on each piece and all this stuff. So it's turned into this whole big thing where all the coffee shops in Nagoya have like these really elaborate breakfasts with their coffee. And I'm super excited.
Yeah, that's just going to be really cool to experience.
Yeah.
Kind of take like get up early, take a little bit of a slow morning, go out to a coffee shop every day and kind of get going.
For sure.
But there's a bunch of cool stuff to see here, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a castle, for one thing. Talked about a lot of castles already, but...
The castle's really interesting because it's a reconstruction, and you can't go inside right now because it's not earthquake safe.
Oh.
And they're actually planning... They were planning to tear it down this year, but I don't think they have yet. The whole project's
been... They're going to tear down the castle?
Yeah, the whole project's been delayed. They're going to rebuild it with wood... as close to original plans as absolutely possible.
Awesome. I remember we talked about a couple other castles that they're doing that with too.
Yeah. They actually already did it with the palace here.
Okay.
So there's a really cool reconstructed palace that has the authentic look to it that you can go visit.
Nice.
But they're going to add the castle, but it's not going well apparently.
Huh.
It's already like delayed 4 years past what it was supposed to be rebuilt by.
Wow. Well, I'm glad there'll still be something there for us to see at least.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think it'll still be there for us. We just won't be able to go outside.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm also excited about the Tokugawa Art Museum.
Yeah.
Because we're both real into the Tokugawa history, right?
That's and looking awesome. Into this, it didn't seem like quite what I maybe thought it was going to be.
How so?
Like, I thought it was going to be like, oh, a bunch of paintings or something. But it's actually a ton of artifacts from one of the sub-branches of the Tokugawa family that lived in Nagoya. So they have like armor and weapons and scrolls and all this really cool stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm also looking forward to the Toyota Commemorative Museum of Industry and Technology.
Yeah.
We're going to get to see some classic cars. There's also the SC Maglev and Railway Park. That might be right below the castle on my list.
Okay.
Because I really want to see that Maglev technology, learn more about that.
Yeah, it seems to be heavily dedicated to the fastest train technology. Yeah.
These are magnetic levitation trains, by the way, if you weren't aware of that.
Yeah. And they've got a bunch of real trains here that you can see.
Yeah. There's the Osu Shotengai Shopping Street. I always love shopping streets. Those are fun to explore.
There's the Atsuta Shrine, which is dedicated to the sun goddess Amaterasu and stores the sacred sword Kusanagi, which is one of the three imperial regalia of Japan.
What?
Not available for viewing by the public.
Oh, well, good, because I don't think we're going to have time to go there anyway, right?
I might have time.
What does that mean?
Because we're meeting in Nagoya, but I might be, if I get up early enough after my flight, I might be able to get there by like 9 or 10 a.m. and have a little time.
The day that I'm meeting you in like early afternoon or something.
Yes, yes. I'm gonna,
I see.
If I feel good enough, I'm going to try to get there early and see this place.
Well, take a bunch of pictures if you do get there.
They have a new museum there that has dozens of examples of historical swords. So you can't see the imperial sword, but you can learn everything about swords and see a ton of real swords there. So that sounds really cool.
I like swords.
The other place I might try to fit in is Osu Kanon Temple. It's kind of right in the heart of Nagoya. It's supposed to be a really cool-looking Buddhist temple. And notably, it has a library that has 15,000 or more classic Japanese texts, including one of the oldest copies of the Kojiki.
No
anywhere
way.
In Japan.
You can see it?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, that is cool.
Should we say what the Kojiki is? That's one of those super old texts, like one of the oldest historical texts. Yeah.
One of the first written texts in Japan that chronicles the early history of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat legendarily, maybe somewhat accurately. I think it's a little bit mix of both.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of stuff. I don't think you could squeeze in all of that stuff in a day trip. But
I think we're spending a day and a half in Nagoya itself and still like, maybe not seeing everything. And then we're taking like 3-day trips or something.
Yeah. I think Nagoya is going to be a really interesting home base. I'm excited to kind of do a bunch of day trips out of there.
Yeah. Coffee and free food every morning and then day trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be great.
For sure.
I'm so excited for a trip too. Oh my gosh.
Me too. It's coming up.
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, before we go, I have a listener mail that I'd like to read, Paul.
Okay.
It seemed relevant to today's topic since we're talking about Kyoto and Osaka and that area. So I exchanged some emails with Mike, and here's what Mike says.
Okay.
Hi, guys. I stumbled across your podcast about a year ago. It's one of my favorite ones. You do such a fine job with your research and providing in-depth information. Thank you, Mike.
Ah.
I spend several months a year in Japan and have done so for many years. Seattle is my other home, if not Japan. I spend much of my time in Kyoto when in Japan, as I have a son and his family living there. I know numerous great places to visit in Kyoto that are really off the beaten track. I could share some with you if you're interested. So, of course, I said, yes, please. I also asked how he was able to spend so much time in Japan, because that sounds awesome, being able to spend a big chunk of the year there. So he said, the main reason I have the flexibility to spend time in Japan is because I'm basically retired. I'm in my early 70s and have decided to spend time doing what I enjoy, which includes travel. My son lives in Kyoto. He married a Japanese woman, and they have a 4-year-old daughter, Luna. She's my only granddaughter, so seeing them is a major incentive for me to visit. When I'm there, I usually stay in a ryokan called the Matsubaya for a few weeks, and then I rent a very small apartment in the Mukō area of Kyoto, right on the JR Kyoto line, for the rest of the time. So there's recommendation number one, is the Matsubaya.
Okay.
He says, the people who own and run the Matsubaya ryokan are my friends, as I've been staying there for about 10 years. Sometimes I teach a few ESL classes to the staff while I'm there.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. The Matsubaya Ryokan is a great place and close to Kyoto Station. I really like Kyoto Station, too, he says. I frequently spend several hours there exploring all of the floors, shops, restaurants. It's remarkable how much is there. Underground is an entire world. It's a destination by itself. I remember we talked about that in the train stations episode we did, right? Kyoto has like the biggest underground area or something like that. Maybe it's the tallest one. It has like
the most levels or something.
Yeah, something like that.
It's definitely big. I remember that.
Yeah. So he says, here are a few ideas for those who might want to explore Kyoto in a more relaxed fashion. And he listed a few places that we have never talked about.
Oh,
so
I thought it would be
worth talking about. Shoseien Garden. A beautiful garden close to the Matsubaya where I stay, and also close to Kyoto Station. For some reason, there are few tourists. Must be because
there's just too much in Kyoto.
Well, it's just not on the lists, you know. You go on the internet and you look for the lists of all the places that tourists go in Kyoto, and never heard of that one. But I looked up pictures and it looks very nice.
I don't know if I've ever heard a garden recommended in Kyoto that wasn't like in a temple.
Yeah. Well, everybody always seems to focus on the temples and shrines, you know. The Takase River. The Takase River is an artificial river made for transporting rice and sake from Kyoto's center to the Fushimi area in the south. It was used for over 300 years, from 1611 to 1929.
Wow.
It's more like a canal than a river. It basically parallels the Kamo River, which is just a few meters to the east of the Takase River slash canal.
Okay.
Kyoto Railway Museum. He says this museum is fantastic.
I have heard of this.
Yeah?
Yes.
Trains are such a major part of Japanese life and culture that it absolutely makes sense to have a museum about them, of course. We're actually visiting a couple railway museums.
Oh, yeah, we are. We do have two scheduled, don't we?
The one in...
Nagoya.
Yeah, and then...
The one in Saitama or Omiya.
Omiya, that's yeah. it. Yep, yep. So the Kyoto Railway Museum, it's a large museum and houses over 50 retired trains, including versions of the Shinkansen. That'd nice. Be cool to see like old versions, see how they kind of improved them over the years.
Yeah, absolutely.
He says there's much information on the history of trains in Japan. Last recommendation is Umekoji Park. This is right next to the Railway Museum. This is a large and beautiful park, perfect for walking, picnics, observing, and relaxing. The Kyoto Aquarium and the Kyoto Railway Museum are located on separate sides of the park. And you can walk to the park from the Kyoto station area in about 30 minutes, or you can take the JR Sagano line from Kyoto Station, and it's the first stop at the Umekoji Kyoto Nishi Station. He says, this park may not be on the typical list of places to visit in Kyoto, but if you have a few hours, it is well worth the time. And I looked at pictures of this place because he said it's like not too crowded, which a lot of Kyoto is these days, you know?
Yeah.
And even when the sakura are blooming, like there are a bunch of sakura trees in this park, but even with those, it didn't look crowded at all.
Yeah, but the thing about Kyoto being crowded is when people say that, it's literally Kyoto Station, the 10 biggest temples and shrines, and Arashiyama. And that's like what they're talking about.
I guess, yeah.
So anything outside of that, all these lesser known places, that's why it's so cool to get these recommendations.
Yeah. Well, I would think also the sakura places. Like if people are there during sakura season, that stuff is all going to have a lot of tourists. But this one, it looked pretty open.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway. Well, thank you, Mike, for sending in those recommendations.
I'm really excited, Mike.
Check those out next time I'm in Kyoto.
Yeah.
All right. Well, last order of business. We should thank our Shogun-level patrons. Got Wesley C., Nicholas McKibben, Kevin Harris, Brady K., Jack, Michael Morris, David Imani, Darwin Perrier, Ethan Teague, Yasmin, Jason. Not me. This is another Jason.
Oh, okay.
Shout out to Jason's. Katarina and Ellery. Susan, Tori, Shaked Rosenthal. I'm going to keep going, Paul. We got some new Shoguns recently.
Sweet.
Tina Anderson, Alexa Gonzalez, Pamela Arola. Thank you all so much for your support.
Thank you.
And for everyone who's not a member, please consider joining the Patreon. That would be much appreciated. And there's a bunch of stuff up there for you to enjoy. We got a Q&A. We got a behind-the-scenes video. Got some exclusive folktale episodes, cooking videos, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, what are we talking about next time?
Our next episode is going to be this year's Halloween special.
Oh, my.
Japan's most horrific crimes.
It's going to get dark.
Oh, my gosh, are they horrific. That is the perfect word for these.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say about this. Like, once I started digging in the research, I started thinking, like, is this really a good idea? Do we really want to talk about this stuff?
I have the same thought, man. Like, viewer discretion is advised.
Yeah. This is, oh boy.
Yeah.
This is, like, the most adult episode yet, I think.
People seem to love the true crime thing, I guess. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
It's horrific.
Sure is. Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.